listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favourite authors.
Today we are super excited to welcome Craig Johnson all the way from Wyoming, New York Times best-selling author of the Longmire series, including 13 novels as well as novellas and a collection of short stories featuring the much-loved Walt Longmire. The novels were adapted for television by Warner Horizon for a television series on A&E and more recently Netflix.
You don't know what a miracle this is. Like for me, this is, you know, there's a reason why Walt doesn't carry a cell phone.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. We're absolutely thrilled. And I've got to say, my mum is in the room with me and she's never done this before because she's so excited just to hear you talk.
Oh, that's very sweet.
She's also too afraid to talk to you too.
Actually, I'm pretty approachable. I'm pretty friendly. Like that, so she shouldn't be intimidated in any way.
She's also the one responsible for introducing me to all the books and all the novellas, so it's all
we like
her.
Already then.
Thank you again so much for joining us. We're absolutely thrilled to talk to you today. After 13 Longmire novels, as well as the novellas and short stories, you must have a deep affection for Walt Longmire, a man of thought and a man of action. What initially inspired Walt, and how much of your own values and beliefs have you put into this character?
Oh boy, there's a question. That's going to take up the whole 30 minutes, right?
No, that's
there.
Fine.
I don't know. In many ways, like it wasn't so much what Walt was as much as what Walt wasn't. Whenever I first started developing the character, that was whenever the CSI stuff was really, really big, and everything was all about the forensics and the ballistics and all this stuff. And I ran into two DCI investigators here in Wyoming, where we have one crime lab in the entire state. And I asked them, I asked them how long it took to get DNA evidence, and they said about 9 months. And so I started thinking about it and thinking, well, okay, well, what if you did, what if the character of the protagonist was the sheriff of the least populated county in the least populated state in America? You know, maybe that would force you to, you know, be more, you know, more into the characters and the place, which is always where it seems to me the best writing is done. And so that's when I kind of came up with the idea of Walt. And that was the job. And then the character himself, a little different in the sense that, you know, an awful lot of the crime fiction protagonists, you know, tend to be the 6'2" of twisted steel and sex appeal kind of character. And I was that's not the guy that I look at in the mirror in the morning. So I found that kind of character somewhat annoying. And so I thought, well, okay, well, what if you had a guy who was more like the rest of us? You know, he was what I tend to refer to as overweight, overage, overly depressed. One of the big catalysts in Walt's life is the fact that his wife died about 5 years, before we ever meet him in the cold dish. And he's not ever really going to get over that. It's not something that he's ever, completely going to get past. And so I thought, okay, well, maybe that sadder but wiser sheriff, would be something that would be, a little bit more interesting, to be, stuck in his head for, for like 350, 400 pages because, the books are written in first person. And so, we're kind of in Walt's head, and so trying to do a character that was, clinically depressed, as your main character, there are a lot of pitfalls, with that particular type of character. So I had to give him, some weapons, to be able to kind of hold that depression, in check. One is a sense of humor. He's got a pretty sharp sense of humor and a pretty, pretty wonderful world view, it seems like to me. I mean, one of the things is that, he really cares about the people, that are in the county that he's responsible for. He's decent, he's kind, he's good-hearted, but he's also smart and he's extraordinarily well-read. And it just was trying to find somebody that I wouldn't mind, climbing into the truck, and spending time with, for this many novels, specifically. I mean, there are a lot of stories, Arthur Conan Doyle killed off Sherlock Holmes at least once, just because he got so tired of him like that. But, thank goodness my protagonist isn't a coke-addicted sociopath, and so you know, it makes him a little bit more, enjoyable as far as his company is concerned.
Yeah, he's an absolutely relatable character. And it's funny you say about the humor, because I love the humor in the novels. And one of my favorite quotes from the Western Star Wars, like a woman with a broken nose, you can love her, but she ain't lovely. How on earth do you come up with these?
It's for women, no matter what, like that. And so, he has a little problem along those lines, like that. But for me, like that character, he makes up his own mind about things like that, and that makes him fun to be around.
Some of the one-liners just had me laughing out loud. I love the relationship between Walt and Henry. It's a brotherhood whereby Henry serves as Walt's alternate perspective and makes him think in ways he probably wouldn't before. And someone says to Walt, "You seem to have preserved your humanity, which I imagine is difficult in your line of work." Do you think it's Henry who helps him retain this sense of empathy and humanity?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that if there's a sense of spirituality in the books, the idea of the books was to try and write them in so many different layers, and some people, they get one or two layers or three or four layers like that, and that's enough. That's all they really want. But then there are other people, obviously, such as yourself, who, read, on a much deeper, layering like that and look for more things that happened to be there in the books. And it would be dreadful for me to let someone like you down like that. And so it's very important that I write in all of those different layers like that. And Henry, the main reason why the spirituality of the books is a native spirituality is pretty simple. One of my good buddies, Marcus Red Thunder, up on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation, is the model for Henry. Mm-hmm. And, whenever I'm around him, like at standing around a campfire, like at up on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation, or whatever I happen to be doing at a powwow or whatever, one of the things I'm incredibly aware of is the fact that, my kind of people have only been in this part of the world, for a couple of hundred years, whereas his kind of people have been there for a couple thousand. And so it's quite possible that they might be aware of more that's going on around us than maybe we are. And so I think that, that's one of the things that he provides to Walt, other than, just such an incredible bond and friendship, crossing two very differing cultures. But then that kind of goes across the board to a number of other characters too. I mean, whenever I was putting the character together and the books together and formulating the idea of Walt, one of the things I became aware of very early on was that with Walt and Henry being the two main characters, especially in The Cold Dish, and being, kind of personifying, the two major cultures of both the red and the white society, one of the things was is that the books were going to have an incredibly strong masculine narrative. With Walt, being the voice of the books, and Henry being there and all of that. And I thought, well, I've got to find some way to kind of pull these books back towards the center. And the only way to do that, of course, was like that to really introduce a major number of, really strong and independent female characters within the books. And I think that if you look at the construction of the books, you'll see that Walt is in many ways, kind of surrounded by what I tend to refer to as a pride of lionesses, who are all, responsible, for different aspects of Walt's life. Whether it be Ruby, who, puts the post-its on the door facing so that Walt knows what it is that he's doing on a daily basis, or whether it's Dorothy over the hill who keeps him fed like that and also keeps him fed, with all the information, because any small town cop will be happy to tell you that, the places where you go to ask questions are the bars, like in the cafes, because that's where people talk. And so not only is she the one that keeps him alive like that, by feeding him, but she's also the one that provides an awful lot of information, about a small town community. And, it goes on from there like that. I mean, there's his daughter, Katie, like that, who's the lawyer as the series starts out, in Philadelphia. So it's kind of a removed, kind of relationship, but, an emotional anchor that he has, with the one last anchor that he has, left over from the death of his wife. Like that. And then, of course, there's Vic Moretti, the undersheriff in the books. And she's an extraordinarily important character in the sense that she provides a counterpoint to Walt in so many ways. I mean, when I was constructing that character, she was opposites all the way down the line. If the sheriff was going to be male, the undersheriff needed to be female. If the sheriff was rural, the undersheriff needed to be urban. If Walt is knowledgeable about the social and cultural implications of, the job that he does, with knowing the history of the county and knowing all the details, the county and all of that, well, Vic would obviously be, more knowledgeable about the technical aspects of the job, her knowledge of forensics and ballistics, you know, and all of these things, you know, would be infinitely better than his. If Walt is very careful about the type of language that he uses, Vic is careful in a different way.
Vic's a wonderful character, and it's not, you know, meeting her on the screen as compared to the books I read the novels first, she's a little bit different. Were you surprised by the casting of Katie Sackhoff?
Not really like that. I mean, the only piece of advice that I gave them was please don't get some, you know, 5'10", thin as a beanpole model / actress in an Armani suit and 4-inch heels, you know, to play that role. Please get, you know, an actress that, you know, that has a good face, you know, that has, you know, an athletic build to her that looks like, you know, she could actually do the job, you know. And I was really kind of pleased with the casting of Katie Sackhoff. Most people are really excitable about the fact that, you know, that Vic has blonde hair in a television show like that. And certainly in the books, you know, she's a brunette, you know, all the way through. Maybe the physical build is a little bit different too, like that. But I mean, the big thing I've noticed with Hollywood as far as the casting is concerned, that Hollywood can generally find somebody who is, you know, they can find somebody who's exactly, you know, the physical description of whoever it is that you came up with the character. But sadly enough, they might not be able to act their way out of a paper bag. You know, the big card there that gets thrown down on the table is always going to be acting ability. And, you know, we were extraordinarily fortunate in the sense that, you know, the producers and directors were always looking to the thought that, you know, we need to get good people to play these roles like that. If they're slightly physically different than what it is that's in Craig Johnson's books, you know, well, we're willing to take that loss, you know, just so we can have somebody who is, you know, as strong of an actor or actress as we can get. And I think that they really, you know, did a magnificent job in culminating an entire ensemble of actors that were just phenomenal as far as that's concerned, you know. And I don't know, very rarely, I guess, do you hear an author say that like that, but I think they did a pretty marvelous job. It's two different, you know, universes, you know, there's no two ways about that. I mean, what you do with a television show and what you do with a series of books is two very different breeds of cat, but I'm very proud of what they did with Longmire.
Yeah, I think it's great. And like you said, they're very different, but it doesn't matter because I think from reading the novels, you've got such a deep knowledge of the characters that to see them and see them in different ways, I think it's fantastic. And I love Katie Sackhoff. I think she's a brilliant Vic. I've loved her.
I think so too. Like that. I mean, you know, one of the things that's kind of interesting about her is that looking the way that she does, an awful lot of people forget to see just what kind of a quality actress she is. Like that, you know, she does all of these very physical roles, a lot of science fiction stuff and all this. She is a phenomenal, phenomenal actress. I mean, just the subtlety of her performances and what she does, like, it is just, you know, amazing stuff. It really is.
And having Lou Diamond Phillips is very lucky too. I mean, he's an actor way back from the 80s, and he's just magnificent as Henry Standing Bear.
He is, but, you know, he was like 12 back in the 80s, so that didn't really count. Like,
so was I.
You know, he's now a proper age, you know, like I just like to say. But
I don't think he does age, actually.
Well, is that that phenomenal spirituality and calm and that peace, you know, that Henry has. And he's an extraordinarily intelligent actor. I mean, just, you know, and he's a voracious reader. One of the things that was interesting was that when he did the audition for Longmire, in the audition monologue that they had, and thank goodness, you know, we do live in a period in time like that where you can't slap a wig on Sal Mineo and call him an Indian. And so, you know, nowadays like that, you do have to find somebody who has actually, you know, of native heritage to play these roles. And we're living in a period in time like that when there seems to be an extraordinary renaissance in native actors like that. I mean, one of the things I'm really proud of is that Longmire, you know, probably is responsible for giving more work to more native actors in the last 6 years than all of the rest of Hollywood put together. I mean, with people like Zahn McLaren and Nay Martinez, and, you know, and it's just amazing, like, at the people that we've been able to get, and the ability that they've, you know, had to enhance this show and make it as good as it is just phenomenal like that. But whenever Lou, actually, to get back to the story, actually did his audition, the monologue that they were using for the audition had three contractions in it: an isn't, a wasn't, and a don't. And anybody that's read the books knows that Henry doesn't use contractions. He has a very careful speech pattern. and doesn't use any contractions. And whenever Lou Diamond Phillips did his audition, they sent me the DVD, and I got it, and he took the contractions out. And I thought, he's read my books. And that was bad. He had gone out the weekend before he went in for the audition. He discovered that, you know, the television show was based off a series of books like that, and immediately ran out and bought the first three books of the series and read them over that weekend, and came in that morning and took the contractions out. And you know, and that's just the beginning. I mean, my goodness, you know, on the first day of filming, he was doing a scene at the Red Pony Bar and Grill, and, you know, the phone rings like that, you know, and he used, you know, of course, the signature answer that, you know, Henry uses in the books like that. He picks up the phone and he says, Red Pony Bar and Grill in continual soiree. And the director said, ooh, that's really good. Keep that. And Lou said, I will.
Your latest book, The Western Star, has a really interesting narrative structure moving from past to present, allowing the reader to gain more insight into young Walt and his relationship with his wife and Henry Standing Bear. How did the idea of the parallel narratives emerge?
Well, it's not the first time I've done that. The first time that I did it was Another Man's Moccasins, mm-hmm. you know, which was the book that kind of did that dual narrative, like that, you know, whenever Walt finds, you know, a Vietnamese girl on the side of a highway, here in Wyoming, like it reminds him of the first homicide investigation that he was involved with at Tansanit Air Force Base in Vietnam back in 1967, when he was one of the first Marine investigators. And, you know, what I love is that you can tell two stories from two different time periods. Of course, it's fraught with a number of perils in the sense that, you know, you've got to do a couple of things. First of all, it's kind of like what I tend to refer to as there's an old rodeo trick, and I'm sure that they do it in Australia too, like that. It's called riding Roman, like that, where you know have two horses, you know, and you've got the bridles on two horses, and you've got one foot on each mm-hmm. saddle, and both of those horses are running along out there in the arena, and you're up on top of them there. Well, you know, you got to keep those horses going at the same pace is what you got to do. Like whatever they do, it has to happen at the same time. And that's kind of the way that I, you know, kind of approach that book. You know, I thought to myself, okay, the pacing on these books, you know, these two books, basically you're writing two books and combining them together, and they have to have some sort of a tie-in, you know, to kind of make them all kind of pull together at the very end, you know, but the pacing has to be similar. You know, the climaxes have to be similar, the denouement, all of the basic aspects of the book have to be similar, and then they have to have a really good strong tie to bring those two stories together for there to be a reason as to why it is that you told both of them at the same time. And so it offers up a number of challenges like that, but I think it also gives you an opportunity to go into two different time periods and actually discuss, you know, what it is like that actually happened in the previous situation that have made for the situation that's, you know, more contemporary.
I love that horse analogy. That's fantastic. I'm an educator and I'm going to use that. It's fantastic. Without giving away the storyline, because I know there are many people who are yet to read it, the ending or the twist was such a surprise to me, pleasant surprise. Do you often surprise yourself when you come up with these interesting threads and storylines?
I put an awful lot of thought into it like that, because whenever I go into one of my events, you know, and there'd be a couple hundred people there, I'm not stupid enough to think that I'm the smartest guy in that room like that. And so, but I might be the best prepared. Like that, if I have a full year like that to think about this book and how it is and what it is I want to do, it would be shameful for me to try and be predictable. I mean, for me, that's one of the biggest, you know, faults, you know, with just about any form of entertainment, whether it be books or movies or plays or, you know, music or whatever. Like if it's predictable, then, you know, I'm going to lose interest, you know, rapidly. And so, you know, I try and work against that predictability factor as much as I possibly can. And, you know, and think about, you know, what it is that I'm trying to say, too, like that. But, you know, because each of these books, you know, it's one of those layers is, you know, is always going to be the fact that, you know, I'm trying to get a message across. You know, I'm not just trying to stack up bodies like cordwood, you know, I'm just, you know, and do a whodunit here. Though I do like, you know, to challenge, you know, the reader and have them enjoy the whodunit aspect of the books. I like to have a lot more to it than that. But, yeah, I try and be as clever as I can possibly bear to be, like as much as I can bring to the table.
So like Walt, you're a man of thought and a man of action.
Oh, you know, I put Walt in a lot of really horrible situations I hope I never have to face. I don't mind having the ranch here like that, and doing my 14 cords of firewood, and working with the stock and doing all that stuff like it. But boy, a lot of people shoot at Walt, and I don't like being shot at, to be honest. So I kind of find him in, a lot of difficult situations. It's every once in a while somebody will say, well, are you ever going to take it easy on Walt? And I always think to myself, well, I could write a book where Walt's playing pinochle on his desk, but I don't think anybody would want to read that. So sometimes there's a little bit more, dramatic, a heightened effect, like as far as that's concerned. But he's a big guy; he can take it.
He's a big guy. Now, the Western Star concludes with threads left untied. Have you begun work on the next novel?
Oh, next novel's already done.
It's already done,
rewritten, handed in. And I'm about four chapters into the one the year after that.
And Mum's going, when can she read it?
I'm afraid that Mom's going to have to wait till September, along with everybody else.
That's perfect. It's just for her birthday.
It's a good book. It's called The Depth of Winter. And amazingly enough, the temperature never gets below 90 degrees in the book. And so that's a geographic clue as to far as where the book takes place.
Interesting. Well, we look forward to it. I loved in Buffalo, Wyoming, there's a Longmire Day where you and the actors and the producers, as well as 12,000 other people, come to visit the town in celebration of Longmire. How did that begin?
It started out pretty small like that. It was the Buffalo Chamber, like at the little city chamber down here in Buffalo, which is a town of 4,000 people in northern Wyoming here, like that, and kind of the model for Durant, like that, in Johnson County is kind of the model for Absaroka County. But they asked me, they said, well, we'd like to do a Longmire Days and have you come down and sign books in front of the Busy Bee Cafe. And so we did. And I sat down there and signed books, and there must have been, 50, 60 people that showed up or something like that. It was a nice little event like that. And so then the Office of Tourism for the state of Wyoming asked me, they happened to be there, and they said, do you think you could get some of the actors to come up for Longmire Days? And I said, well, I'm not sure. Which ones do you want? And they said, all of them. I said, okay, I'll see what I can do. And so just about all of them have been here for Longmire Days now over the last 5 years or so. And it really is kind of a wonderful event, because it kind of is almost like going back in time. The actors, have a lot to take credit for as far as that's concerned. They don't go hide in a room or stand behind velvet ropes or anything like that. They're just walking around out there with everybody and saying hi and signing things for people and everything. And, I think it always starts from the top down. And, we're fortunate enough to have a fellow by the name of Robert Taylor as the head actor, in our show, that plays Walt Longmire. And he's just an extraordinarily approachable, friendly, down-to-earth guy like that. And I think it just kind of sets the tone for all of Longmire Days. There was one woman that got angry because she didn't get signed up, for the autograph session that she wanted to go to on a Thursday afternoon like that. And I wrote her back and I said, you do realize that if you just stand out in front of the Occidental Hotel in front of the Virginia Saloon and hold Robert's beer, he'll sign anything you want. It really is not that big of a deal.
And he's an Aussie, so we love that too.
I know. People are amazed by that. But I think, Robert's an actor. One of the things I've noticed, an awful lot of, of either, whether they be, Australian or British or Canadian, an awful lot of those actors have a really strong dramatic background in the sense that they've got a theatrical training from academies and all of this. And so, in many ways, they're not movie stars. They're really actors, mm-hmm. And, Robert has the most, amazing ability, to modify his voice and his actions and his physicality to just absorb, whatever it is that, that he wants to do. I watch him when he comes up for Longmire Days, and he'll watch, the cowboys here in Wyoming to see what they do, how they move, what they say, the tone of voice that they use, what angle they have their hat at. And he's just, he's a human sponge as far as that kind of thing is concerned. And, people are stunned, consistently whenever I go places, they'll say to me, Yeah, but he's from Australia, isn't he? Like that. And I'm like, well, yeah, he is. And they say, well, he doesn't sound like it. And I'm like, well, no, he's supposed to sound like a Wyoming sheriff. You know, that's part of his job. Like that. And so he sounds like a Wyoming sheriff. Like that. Now, he's got a little daughter, Scarlett, like that, who, you know, has a mother who has a wonderful Australian accent. And then she's got this father who speaks with an American accent for 4 months out of the year. So she's probably going to be sociopathic by the time she gets driving age. I don't know what she's going to think she is.
With so much American television here, my kids pick it up too. And I'm like, what? Where did that come from?
I know. Like, I was actually in Prague one time, like, and we got picked up at the airport, and on the drive into town, there was a taxi driver, like, and his English was impeccable. And I said something to him. I said, you know, what, did you have English? You know, did you have English classes in school? And he goes, oh, no, we had Russian all the time that we were. I was like, oh, so many television and movies and shows are all, you know, in English. Like that. And he says, oh, it's very easy to pick up the American dialect. Like, and then he pauses for a second and he goes, it's not a particularly difficult accent. And I was like, that's okay. You know, it hurt my feelings. Actually, one of the things that's like a little bit of a misnomer, though, like that as far as Americans are concerned, because, I mean, Americans, you know, all across, you know, the country, we have so many different accents, you know, encapsulated, you know, here in our country. Yeah. Americans actually love accents. You know, we really love accents, you know, and boy, you know, one of the really wonderful ones has to be Australian. My gosh. Like, and then, you know, the whole, you know, Australian aspect, you know, there's just an openness and a friendliness to it that is just, you know, to us, just absolutely appealing. Like, and, you know, Robert's living proof of that. You know, my gosh, like that, you know, everywhere I go, like I walk into a library event, you know, and there'll be a couple of hundred people there, and there's always going to be a couple of hundred women that wish that I was Robert Taylor. But, you know, that doesn't have anything to do with his accent. That has a lot to do with other things. Okay, but I don't
that. The whole package. Now, you yourself had a bit of a starring role in Longmire recently. My mum spotted it, actually.
I don't know if I would call that starring. I don't know. that's a stretch of the term there. Like, they were on to me for a couple of years, like, to do a walk-on on the show, like, to do a little cameo role, like that. And they'd been on to me for a couple of years there, and finally, they got in cahoots, which is a Wyoming legal term. Like that. I got in cahoots with my wife and arranged for me to do a role there in the sixth episode of the sixth season. And, you know, the only good thing was is there weren't any lines that I had to learn. So all I had to do was just, you know, stand there and try not to goof things up. Like that. But they had to do about seven or eight different takes. So I found ways to goof it up.
Well, my mom thought you deserved an Academy Award for it, so...
Your mom's too kind. She's way too kind.
She's just a fangirl, sorry. Well, thank you so much, Craig. It's been just such a pleasure to speak to you after reading your books and hearing Mum talk about it and finally getting me to read it and watching the series as well. It's just been a wonderful experience then to hear your take on it. And we are planning our Longmire trip to see a Longmire day.
Absolutely.
Definitely.
Oh, good. Oh, you should come. Definitely should come.
Like, definitely.
We'll have a blast. I get to see it. And it'll make Robert feel much more at home, like, if you guys are here.
We'll wave the Australian flag around. Again, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. It's been wonderful speaking to you.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you, guys.
You are listening to Words and Nerds, talking to your favorite authors.